Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. Whether your child is just beginning the college admission process or is already in college, this podcast is for you. You'll find food for thought and information about college and about navigating that delicate balance of guidance, involvement, and knowing when to get out of the way. Join your hosts, Vicki Nelson and Lynn Abrahams, as they share support and a celebration of the amazing experience of having a child in college.
Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. This is where we talk about all things that have to do with being the parent of an almost college student or a college student or even sometimes a recent college grad. My name is Vicki Nelson, and I am a professor of communication, a former director of academic advising, and most importantly, the mother of three daughters who have gone to college. And I'm here, as usual, with my friend and my colleague, Lynn Abrahams.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lynn. I also work in a college environment with students who have learning disabilities, and I have two sons who have been in and out and through college. So I come at this from two angles, from a professional and personal side.
And we're going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to tap a little bit more into Lynn's professional side rather than her mom side, I think. And talk about a subject that is really important in terms of college students and really essential that we as parents understand, but something we may not be as familiar with and may not realize. It's certainly a term that I've heard used, but I'm not sure I have a total grasp of it. But it includes all of the skills that are so often the foundation for success, or the lack of those skills sometimes create a barrier to success, the life management and organization and goals kinds of things. So the topic is executive function. And we are both academics. Lynn and I both work at a college, and we live in that academic world. And sometimes just hearing a term like executive function feels a little, I don't know, Lynn, geeky, a little nerdy, a little academic. But it's something that really matters so much and that Lynn works with all the time. So what we're going to do today is turn the tables a little bit on Lynn, and I'm going to turn this a little bit more into an interview and see if I can get from Lynn some explanation and some information about this thing called executive function, executive functioning, and see if we can all learn about it and how we can use it to help our students, because it really does make a difference. So, Lynn, we're going to start from the very basic things. Can you help us, all of us, understand what this thing called executive functioning is?
Okie dokie. So executive functioning are the skills that help you complete projects, achieve your goals, connect with other people. It's sort of an umbrella term that covers all the things we need to get things done. And it's really, I talk to my students about executive functioning as if the part of their brain that is the head of a company, an executive running a company. It's the head of the person or the company that is telling everybody else what to do. The other image that comes to my mind is a conductor at a symphony. If the conductor does not do their job, the musicians don't know when to start and stop, whether to be loud, whether to be soft. So the conductor is the person that gets things going. Executive functions are those skills that really help college students do well. And it's really interesting because if you don't have those skills, no matter how smart you are, you can't show your smarts. So these are really important skills.
Yeah. As you explain it, it suddenly seems to make a little more sense to me. And it strikes me that we talk to students all the time about being independent and taking control of managing their lives. I know the analogy I use so often with students is, you know, you've got to drive your own bus. Mm-hmm. You've got to be the one in charge. So being able to do... recognizing that being able to do that is actually a collection of a lot of little things that you need to be able to do well. So why is this so important for students?
So this is both important for students and it's important for parents. It's important for students because they need to learn what skills they're really good at and what skills mm-hmm. they're not good at that have to do with executive functioning. So I am going to just go through and say some of the skills that this involves. This might make it clear. Mm-hmm. Focusing, being attentive in class. Okay, that's mm-hmm. one example. Planning things out. And organizing either materials or organizing assignments.
Yep.
So those are some examples of skills that students need to do well in or to have in order to do well in college. Parents need to know about this stuff because it's really hard to support your kids in getting better at these things. And so it's important as parents for us to think about how can I help my kids get better at managing their time or planning or, reading even cues of what they're supposed to be doing? And so it's a hard task to support your kids.
I really like that you talk about these things as skills and you talk about parents helping students get better at these things, because I think so often we kind of sometimes write them off. I'm just not good at organizing. I'm just not good at being able to do this and this. And the idea that it really is a collection of skills that you can, and just thinking of it as a skill is something you can work at and get better at.
Absolutely.
Not just something you either have or don't have.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are skills that you need to learn. And, you're not really born with them. You either, you learn how to do them and then you make them into habits and you repeat them and repeat them. Yeah. So these are definitely things that
you can
practice. Get better at.
The more you practice, the better you get.
Absolutely.
So, Lynn, I watch you kind of light up when you start to talk about all of this, and I see the energy. So back up just a little bit, and can you tell us a little bit about, your story and how you came to have so much focus in what you do as you work with students who are learning these skills, struggling with these skills, building these skills?
Mm-hmm. So I have always worked, my entire career has been working with students who struggle with academics. Early on, I actually was trained as a music therapist, and I wanted to use music as a way to help kids. And then I decided to go back to school to just study how the brain is wired up and sort of leave music as my hobby and learn about how different brains and how different students are think in different ways and process information.
How they're wired.
And so, I work with students who have diagnosed learning disabilities, learning differences, all different kinds, from kids with ADHD, kids with dyslexia, kids who are on the autism spectrum. So I work with, in a program at a college, with kids who have those diagnoses. I have come to realize, though, after this whole long career in this field, that there really isn't such a clear difference between students who have these diagnosed learning differences and students who don't. I think it's all a continuum. Mm-hmm. I think we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and we all need to figure out what we're good at to work around what's hard for us. For example, executive functioning. I think every single student I've worked with, you know, has some need to improve on executive functions. And that includes the students I taught in, you know, first year seminars, students who didn't have diagnosed learning mm-hmm. differences. And I also think in particular, over the last few years, these are areas that students have struggled with even more because the pandemic, they've been, you know, they've been in school online and they're not, you know, in the classroom as much. Mm-hmm. So that has made things more difficult. I think increased anxiety and stress also interferes with how we get things done mm-hmm. and how we have trouble getting things done. So in a way, that's why I think executive functions are, it's such an important topic, because it's something as humans we have difficulty yeah. with, and we all need to get a little better at learning how to focus.
Yes.
And I mean,
yes.
we're barraged with information right and left, and there are people in the field who say that, you know, life in general sort of these days requires so much from our brains, you know, each one of us. And so yeah. this is an important.
And that whole idea of multitasking and trying to juggle and keep all of those things going, we're all doing all the time. And sometimes I think we don't realize how much students are having to do that kind of thing too. I mean, I see them, they have five classes with five different professors and they have to learn five different styles of learning, and they have to figure out when to do their studying and when to spend time with their friends and when to, you know, all of these things. And I really like the way you describe it as a sort of a continuum, and that everyone has some portion of a lot of these things, because, you know, I know over the years as we've talked about things and you talk about things that you're seeing or working with your students in a program for students with learning differences. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly saying to you, but it's not just those students. It's the ones that are, you know, are in my classes too. And even the really, you know, the really academically excellent students that are struggling with these things. So for all of us to remember that, you know, this little executive that's sitting up in our brain is kind of keeping us moving the way we need to, on track, that we need to think about that and think about students. So it's a pretty long list that you're, you know, saying are these things that are all part of executive functioning. Are there specific ones that students tend to struggle with the most or more often?
So there's, you know, I would say that the areas that are most difficult are usually planning and organization. Mm-hmm. So that whole time management piece is really important. But there are also some other parts that we don't talk about as much and that do fall under the umbrella of executive function, like emotional regulation mm-hmm. and impulse control. So in other words, being aware of your feelings and being able to cope with your feelings, being able to think before you act, mm-hmm. being able to shift, we call this is a very geeky term here.
Here we go.
Cognitive flexibility. So when we're able to shift gears, okay. like move from one class to another.
Okay. So know? Cognitive meaning having to do with your thinking.
Right.
And then shifting.
Yeah. Flexibility.
Yeah. So you go from a science class to a literature class, you know, a yeah. science class with a very rigid professor to a literature class with somebody who's kind of laid back and loosey-goosey. That's not right. A technical academic term. and you have to make those kinds of switches.
Yes, and that all comes from, this part of the brain that is organizing us.
Okay. So I can imagine that students are struggling. And some seem to make them just glide through, and it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. So they're on that one end of the spectrum versus the ones on the other. Just to clarify terms, because as I'm hearing some of the things you're describing, how is executive function or what do we say? Lack of executive function or weaker executive functioning or less executive functioning?
The term is deficit, and I don't like that term, so let's not go there.
So how is
that
less executive functioning different from something like ADHD?
Okay, so this is where all the terms overlap totally.
Okay.
Students who have ADHD are often students who struggle with executive functions. But students who have all kinds of differences struggle with executive functions, even students who are depressed, for example. So it's executive functions has a role in just about any kind of a disability. And it all overlaps. Some people use ADHD and executive function synonymously as the same, and it really isn't. Executive function is the large umbrella term. Kids who have ADHD may struggle in that area. Kids who are depressed may struggle. I mean, think about accomplishing a whole lot when you're feeling really bad. So it might present like ADHD or like you have that kind of, area of difficulty, but it might just be feeling depressed, So all these terms overlap. And I think I would caution parents to look at behaviors rather than these terms. Does your student have trouble organizing themselves? Well, whether you call it ADHD or executive function doesn't matter. You want to work on organization. If a student has trouble shifting gears, then that's the area you want to work on. And then there are students who are really good at some of these things, who might be really creative and empathetic, and that's also tapping into executive function. And that might be a talent or a skill for a student. So in other words, look at the behaviors, don't look at the terms.
We get caught up in those terms.
Absolutely.
So the labels, it's human nature. We like to put labels on things because
we think we can control it if we label it.
It feels as though we, we understand it if we can put a label on it.
Yep.
So you're talking about, how parents can, look at the behaviors and then work on the student, if the student has trouble organizing, help them work on organizing. And so I guess I keep asking these sort of two-part questions, I think, sometimes, but I don't know if you answer these together or whether two separate questions. So one question is this something that is just a developmental thing? In other words, do students have to just get older? Is it something you outgrow or something that changes as you develop? So that's one question. Let's start with that one.
So one of the exciting things about this whole looking at this for parents, I think, it is that the ages between 18 and 28 are the years that there's this growth spurt in terms of executive functioning.
Okay. And we tend to think that kids are grown up by 18.
We tend to think that they're all done. And absolutely that is not true. The front of the brain, that prefrontal cortex, and this is where it gets a little geeky sounding, but that part of the brain is really in a growth spurt for that decade. So this is the time to really learn that stuff, to really work on all of these skills. So if your 18-year-old is really struggling, do not even get close to giving up because they have so many years ahead of them to really learn this stuff. And even as adults, you know, there are, you know, many adults with ADHD who are also learning, you know, how to compensate for these areas of difficulty. The brain, I mean, that's the other thing we've learned over the years is that the brain continues to change and grow. There, you know, the term neuro, you know, neuroflexibility, neuroplasticity, that the brain keeps changing. So there's lots of hope here.
Okay. So it really gets to my second question, which was, you know, by the time your student heads to college, which is where they need all of these things, they need it earlier too, but, you know, they're on their own and they really need it then. Is it too late? And it sounds as though you're saying it's
absolutely
not. It's not only that it's too late. It's not too late. It's that's when it's happening.
This is the appropriate time to really work on these skills.
So then I guess the alternate question becomes, do you have to wait until then
to work on
it?
No.
So if I'm trying to wrap my head around this, that if, you know, if it's between 18 and 28 that all of this is really happening and kind of coming to a head there, is any work that I'm going to do when my child is middle school and early high school and high school, is it going to matter if
you know,
that's not happening till later?
First of all, these are such important life skills that they need to be worked on, you know, from early on. And these are the skills that allow kids to show what they have, you know, what they've got to offer. So they're incredibly important. In fact, many, many schools in elementary school start in really early helping kids learn how to organize their materials or plan out their day or take an assignment and break it into small pieces. Mm-hmm. So it begins in elementary school. They build on it in middle school. That's when it really gets going because kids are now going to different classes with different teachers. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, it really gets going. So all I'm saying is don't give up on your 18-year-old.
Or your 27-year-old.
Or your 28-year-old.
That's a long stretch. And you know, that's, when I think about it, most students graduate from college when they're, you know, 21, 22, 23. And so, you know, I mean, we think about they're grown up when they're 18. We certainly think of them as grown up or adults when they graduate from college and they're in their mid-20s. But they're still working on this. So let's get specific then. What, I mean, you talked about, and I think it's really helpful the way you described, you know, even in elementary school and middle school where they're learning how to break up assignments, this is so that as a parent now, I begin to understand why my child is being asked to do some of those things, and then why they might or might not be struggling with those things and encouraging them and helping them. As parents, we want to be more than just observing what the schools are doing, though. Mm-hmm. Are there things that parents can and should be doing with their students when they're, you know, when they're home, they're still under their roof, to help them work on these skills?
So the first thing to do is to really assess what's going on. What's the difficulty? Where are they having trouble? Mm-hmm. and then to take a look at what their strengths are, what they're really good at, and to see if there's some way they can use that stuff. I talk to parents a lot about how you can change the physical environment to help your kids be on track. For example, you know, talk to your kids about staying away from, you know, putting the phone away, or, you know, setting up an environment that's really conducive to focus. For some kids, that means listening to music helps them focus. For some kids, that might mean chewing gum helps them focus. I'm going to say a little story about my son now. One of my kids, when he was younger, in order to focus, he needed to move. He couldn't just sit still. This is Jeremy. And so we had a trampoline in our living room. And when he was like studying for a test, he would get on the trampoline and bounce.
And I think I'm glad I had girls.
But it helped him focus. So it's about figuring out what helps your child focus. You know, my husband and I both do something. We set our clocks 5 minutes ahead of time. Uh-uh. You know, that's a physical thing you can do to make sure you're on time. You could, use a whiteboard and make a list of things.
I have a number of students who do that. I talk about, you know, how do you organize? How do you plan? You know, we talk about planners, and they say, well, I have a whiteboard in my room, and I put everything I need to do on that.
Or if you need to leave the house or leave your room with certain materials, put them in front of your door before you go to bed at night, you know, so that they're...
So all those tips and tricks you can kind of do.
And there are ways to kind of modify tasks to make them a little bit easier. There are also ways, I'll give you an example of that, like giving yourself rewards when you finish things. You know, breaking tasks up into little pieces. But once your kids get to college, the other thing in particular, college, you want to remember is that having your kids ask other kids to help them or other people to help them is part of the list of strategies. You know, so if you have trouble getting to class on time, there's nothing wrong with asking one of your friends to knock on your door, make sure you're getting to class, you know? So asking other people to help, can also be really a way to approach it.
So over the years, you've worked with so many students, you must have heard lots and lots of these kinds of things that help students, that strategies and the tips to make it work.
I mean, that's part of the fun for me of the work that I do, because every student's a puzzle. And so we're trying to figure it out together, what works and what doesn't work. I mean, the other thing is, you know, it's not a one size fit all thing. You know, students have to figure out on their own. You can't tell a student to get this planner and fill it out this way. You have to get them to figure out what kind of planner works for them. How can they fill it out so that it works for them? So it's kind of fun.
So lots of trial and error. And remembering that means error and it means failure.
Right.
And
mistakes
things
are good.
That are going to work and things that are not going to work. And I love how you describe it as a kind of a puzzle and working on it together, because I think, you know, as parents, if we're trying to work with our kids in middle school and high school to get better at these skills, so that we can send them away with confidence when we're not there looking over their shoulder all of the time, that idea of partnering with your student and figuring it out together. So understanding, as a parent, understanding this thing called executive functioning and understanding how it works and being able, in a way, to explain it to my student and say, you know, here are the things that this means, and let's make this into a kind of a you know, a challenge, a game together to see how we can help you get better at these things.
And as parents, we have our own issues with executive function. It's not like it's something just our kids are struggling with. So it's really helpful to share that with your kids. You know, to say this is, you know, one of the problems I have is that when I try to keep so many things in my brain, I'll forget, you know, something.
Yep.
But share that with your kids and even share some of the strategies you've tried to make it better.
If I don't write things down on a list, they're gone. And more so as I go along in years, I've got to have those things written down. So that's a lot. It's a lot of information, and we're trying to absorb it all. And there, you know, those of you listening, some of you are saying, "Wow, I'm lucky. My kid is pretty good at these things, and I don't have a lot to do." And then there are some parents who are probably saying, "Okay, I can see I've got my work cut out for me." Mm-hmm. And even if your child has gone away to college, you know, over 18, don't give up, and and maybe, you know, keep asking a few questions and encouraging them to get help and work with the people. You know, if there's a tutoring center or an academic success center, and those are the people who are professionals at doing this and encouraging your student, because it's hard when they're away and you say, I'm worried about their ability to keep track of their assignments or organize or make decisions or regulate their emotions and all of those things, and reminding them that there are people at the school who can help them with those things in addition to their friends.
And also remind them that it's a grown-up behavior to ask for help.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to go to college and be all grown up and not have to ask for help. Yeah. That's just not...
Students are so anxious to be independent
and
feel that being independent means I have to do everything all by myself all the time.
Right.
So for those parents who are saying, I have my work cut out and I want to understand this a little better because it, you know, this just washed over me on this podcast, and I need to try to make sense of it. You know, Lynn, that we usually, whenever we have guests on our podcast, we like to say, so are there any books that you like that you would like to recommend? So I'm going to turn the tables, and as our guest expert today, are there books you would recommend to people who want to read a little bit more?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, really? Lynn always has books.
I always do. And I always have favorite ones for the moment, actually. So I am going to recommend three books. The first one is a book called, this is new to me, this book, and I'm so excited about it. But the title is Children Who Fail at School But Succeed in Life. Lessons from Lives Well Lived. The book is by Mark Katz. And in some ways, this is my favorite at the moment because he really talks about how kids who struggle in school with these kind of executive functions, they may look like they're not going to do well at all in their lives. And yet, when they get out of school, some of these kids just soar. Mm. And he describes how, you know, when you're in school, you know, when you think of many different kinds of smarts, the kinds of smarts that are tapped into in school are really sort of word smarts and math smarts, but not necessarily all those other smarts that kids might have.
Life smarts.
Yeah. So that when they get out, and he does describe a few case studies that are so wonderful, where you see these folks really successful in their career, in their relationships, after school is over.
Mm.
So that's a really, really wonderful book. Another book is a book that I actually found in my bookcase and I hadn't realized I had. And it's called The Smart But Scattered Guide to Success. How to Use Your Brain to Keep Up, Stay Calm, Get Organized at Work and at Home. The book is by Peg Dawson and Richard Guare. And we're going to list these books.
Yeah, we'll put these in the show
notes.
You
don't have to write any of this down.
Yep.
The reason I like this book so much is that there's so much concrete advice and strategies. It's really, really clear in terms of looking for advice. I think it's just fabulous. And it's for kids and adults.
Okay. I like those that give me something, an action plan.
Yes.
Something I can do.
That's what this has. Lots of lists and stuff. And then the last book is a book called Brain Hacks, Life-Changing Strategies to Improve Executive Functioning. It's by a woman named Laura Honos Webb. She wrote a book, actually, in the past called The Gift of ADHD. And I loved that book because she talks about the positives, the gifts of ADHD. She talks about how so many kids who have sort of this diagnosis are so creative and intuitive and maybe artistic and energetic and enthusiastic. So she talks about the pluses as opposed to the challenges. And she does the same with executive functioning. She talks about how to work your brain so that you can get the most out of it. And it's really good.
Okay. So three good books. They will be in the show notes. For parents who are saying, yeah, I think maybe I need to explore this a little more, or are looking for some of those strategies and ideas to be able to share with your student and suggest, or who are saying, well, maybe I need this for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, and they can follow it on. So, Lynn, thank you for being our guest for today.
What a pleasure to be in this role.
It was great. I mean, you and I have these kinds of conversations so often, but not in quite the same depth.
Yeah.
So this is really a learning experience for me, too.
Well, thank you.
And we hope that it was helpful for everybody. And we hope if you're listening out there, you have maybe a little bit new perspective on looking at some of the challenges that your student might be facing, or being able to really appreciate that just functioning and getting through the day for some of these students is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And if your student is doing really well on these things, to really appreciate that they're doing a lot. I mean, that a lot's going on for them to be able to manage these things, and that they shouldn't give up because they have all through their 20s to continue to work on these things. So
all through their lives.
Yes, all of us, but especially that prime time that tends to go on for quite a while. So we hope it was helpful, and thank you for sticking with us right to the end of this. If you know of someone else that could use this information, please share this podcast with them. Sometimes word of mouth is the best way to find the information that you need. If you haven't done so, subscribe to the podcast. We put out new episodes twice a month, and you'll get them, and then you'll be able to join us for all of the fascinating topics and interviews we have coming up. And visit the College Parent Central website. The show notes will be there. You just go to podcast, the tab at the top, and you'll have all of the other episodes that are there with lots and lots of information and articles and more information than anyone could possibly want. So we hope we'll see you there. And if you have a chance to leave us a comment and tell us some topics you'd like to hear about, we really want to talk about the things that are on your mind. So that's great help for us. Thanks again for being with us, and we'll see you next time.
See you later.